Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am Rob Oliver, and it is my pleasure to be your host, and I appreciate you taking some time to be with us today. My guest is Karen Tibbles. She had a career in marketing, which she left to go to seminary. There, she found a psychological theory that changed what she thought she knew, and she has joined us today to talk about some of those things that have changed in her mind. So, Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Rob. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Listen, I was reading about you and reading what you're working on. And here's, you're working on a lot of, well, I'll let you say it. Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on and where you're coming from?
Sure. Well, as you said, I was in marketing for many years, and I had a career in major multinational pharmaceutical companies and also in the advertising industry. And I thought I was an expert on why people do what they do, because that's what I did for a living. I'd studied that for many years, that degree in communication, a degree in marketing. And then I went to seminary. And I just had this real awakening to say, oh, there's something underneath what people are doing that I didn't know about. And that is the values that they have. Well, what Jonathan Haidt, who's a professor at NYU, calls the moral foundation theory. But coming from a business perspective, I realized that there was something else going on that he wasn't talking about. And actually, one of his mentors, who he studied under, had a theory that he used and adapted, and that talked about the values of rationality. And he hadn't put that in his book at all, because that wasn't what he was interested in. But I was. So my first book was about how these theories, which is moral foundation theory, applies to marketing. I called it Marketing Landmines. And there I talked about the trade-offs people make between the values that they have and the money that they spend, which is an unrecognized area. And I was actually just contacted yesterday by a marketing professor at a university who wants to do research with that theory and to work with it to see how it plays out.
Sure.
And I think it has implications for ethics and all sorts of things. But then I started thinking even more about how this applies to politics, which is Haidt's area. And so that's why I wrote my second book, Persuade, Don't Preach, to really help people understand what was going on. Because as I said in the it really helped me understand why people were doing what they're doing that didn't seem to make sense. You know, anyway, I'll let you ask a question.
No, I was going to say, you know, getting this into the area of politics is, you know, there are things that people don't talk about, right? Especially right now, I feel like our country is so divided, and you have people on both sides of an issue, and they view each other as enemies, and they, you can't even talk about political issues. And maybe this is a side note, what I found is when you start to talk about it, people become so upset or become so emotional that they resort to tearing people down personally, and it doesn't actually end up as a discussion about issues at all. It just becomes personal attacks. And if there's some way that we can figure out how to have rational discussions, or even how to be civil to one another when we are on opposite sides of issues, I am all in favor of that.
Well, I was so anti-politics before I found this theory, because I felt that way for a long time, and I just didn't want to get into it with people. And what I've come to understand as I've worked with these theories is that the theories help you find a way to talk to people, because instead of talking about the politics itself, we can start to talk about what the issues are underneath the politics that are invisible to us. We don't ever think about the values that are driving our political beliefs. And if we start talking about the values, then we can probably come to a point of agreement. But we never do that.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I've thought about it from this perspective. Like, I can't see things from your perspective, and you can't see things from my perspective, because, you know what I mean? That I can see through my eyes and you can't, and you can see through your eyes and I can't. But once we come to understand that underneath what is valuable to me, then we begin to have some understanding of why I have this view and why you have that view. And then it forms a different structure for us to look at the issues. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Let me give you a story that illustrates it. This happened to me a few years ago. My childless aunt, my Aunt Dot, had been, she'd been in my life my whole life. You know, she was there every holiday. She was there with her camera and a gift. She didn't have any children, so me and my cousins, we'd go to visit her. And on my last visit to her, she started in a rant about immigration. Now, in the room with us was her immigrant caregiver, who was there 24/7 caring for her. Mm. And Jeannie did a phenomenal job of caring for my aunt. My aunt was always clean. She was well fed. She didn't keep her from her relatives like some caregivers do. I mean, she really took good care of my Aunt Dot. And I got really upset. Now, I've never done anything like this before in my life, but I told her that it was rude and I stormed out.
Right.
And she died about 18 months later. Mm. And I just didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say to her. But as I've been working with these theories and the work I've been doing after writing the book, which I'll talk about in a minute, I thought about what I could have done differently. So I've come up with this. So we were both talking about immigration, right? She was probably coming at it. Now, I don't know because I can't ask her.
Sure.
She was probably coming at it from the perspective of she loves this country and this country is very important to her. And she was being very protective, probably.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was coming at it from the perspective of she was causing harm to somebody who was in the room with us, who was doing a good job. Those are two different values. Those are two different moral foundations or ethical zones, as I call them. And if I had been able to change the conversation to talk about that, I thought that she was saying that because this country was important to her, I think she probably would have agreed with me. There's nothing to disagree about that, right?
Right.
And I can agree that this country is important to me too.
Sure.
And we could have had a discussion about how important the country is and why it's important. And we could have just agreed on all of that. And then I could have taken it a step further. And I could have done something that I call reframing. And that's the core of the book, is how to do that. Where you take a value or a moral foundation or an ethical zone, whatever word you want to use, that's important to the other person. And you tie your issue to it in such a way that the other person can maybe agree with it, agree with something they probably wouldn't have agreed with if you didn't do that. So for instance, in the example of immigration and my aunt and her caregiver, I could have said, well, Aunt Dot, Jeannie is doing such a great job for you, caring for you, you're clean all the time. And no, not all caregivers do this. She's working really hard. Do you agree that immigrants who work hard deserve to come to this country?
Right.
She may or may not have agreed with me, but I certainly wouldn't have stormed out of her apartment and never seen her again.
Right.
We would have had a conversation, and it would have been on a terms that she probably would have agreed with me. And even if she didn't totally agree, she might have sort of agreed with me, and we would have continued the relationship.
Right.
That's what I mean by reframing. And that's the core of the book.
Okay. So the idea is then to, I guess you kind of have to find where they're coming from. What is the issue that is of value to them?
Exactly. And there's a, although the people do have differences, there is somewhat of a predictable way, because there's been a lot of survey research that's been done. And I describe that in my book and the presentations I give to people about how you can kind of guess, but then of course you should confirm it.
Okay. I know that it's in your book, but is there any way that you can kind of give us a quick insight into what you're talking about with how you can how you can intelligently guess at what's going on.
Sure. So there's five moral foundations, as Haidt calls them. And those are care for others, which is what I was referencing about my aunt's caregiver. Fairness, which was in my answer, and I'll explain that in a minute. Then there's sacredness. Then there's belonging to our country. Mm-hmm. And then there's respect for authority. So there's five, Haidt calls them taste buds on our tongue of morality. Okay. I just heard him say this in a podcast. And we all have all five, but we have kind of systematic differences. And what's happened in the Western world, what they call the weird countries, which are the Western educated, industrialized, rich democracies, is that we have come to value fairness and care for others over the others. So when you look at a graph, the importance that they place on those two of the five is really, really high, like off the charts high. But if you look at conservative countries and also the conservative part of the US, so this does apply across political parties. When you look at the conservative people who call themselves conservative, I'm not naming them, this is what they call themselves. They tend to be more even across all five. So what that means is that they give more importance to sacredness, to respect for authority, and to belonging than the liberals in the U.S. and then weird people, those of us who are in Western educated, industrialized, rich democracies.
Okay. Fascinating. And I've always been told that I was weird, but I didn't realize that I come from a weird country. So that is, it's funny to put it in those contexts. So as you're looking at those five things, how do you kind of get the handle on who you're talking to?
So because my aunt was talking about immigration, she was probably conservative, and knowing her, she was conservative. And that issue fits into the belonging, which is patriotism is part of it.
Okay.
So that was a tip off that I could have used. I didn't use it, but I could have used.
Well, okay. And let me just give you credit for this. I appreciate the fact that you're willing to share a real life example and in which you're realizing that there's an experience for you in which you could have made a difference and you didn't. And that's a huge thing to me. So thank you for being willing to share of yourself. When people are sitting with their Trump loving uncle or whoever it is, which is such a stereotype and I think is detrimental to start off with, and they're saying something that you feel as though you just can't possibly stomach at all. What's the first thing that they can do in order to at least begin to bridge the divide? And it's the same thing goes when you have someone who is, to think about on the other side, a tree hugging, whatever liberal. I don't care who it is. When you're dealing with someone who is left or right, and you feel as though they are extreme, what is the first thing that you can do either for yourself or to start to build a bridge?
Okay. And this is work that I've done since I finished the book, and it's available on my newsletter, which there's a link on my webpage to the newsletter.
Okay.
Called Men in Fractured Relationships. And what I've come to, and I'm going to give credit to a deceased Quaker who originated this idea. It's a four-step process. The first step is ask questions. Okay. We never ask questions. We assume. So we shouldn't, okay. We need to ask questions. So when I told the story of my aunt, I said, hypothetically, I would have said to her, I think that's because you love this country. Am I right?
Okay.
Okay. I ask, I don't assume. Second thing is to listen. And this is so hard. We hate to listen to each other because we think we know what they're going to say. We're trying to get ready what we want to say. And we're reacting emotionally because they said something outrageous. And, you know, to actually sit there and feel your feelings and sit and listen, and not react is really hard. It's really hard. And I call it a spiritual practice.
Okay.
But also, if you've done your preparations, you know what this theory is, and you have enough information, you can use that time of listening to try to figure out what's going on. So even if I was wrong about what was behind her, I would have listened with a new set of ears because I had it. I now have that, this I didn't have then.
Sure.
And then I could prepare after I've listened and really understood what's going on. I can also listen to find something to agree with. So you notice in the story, I said, Aunt Dot, I love this country too.
Right.
So I agreed with something. Now, we never agree with people. We just prepare to argue. If we agree with people and we listen to them and we ask questions, people are going to relax.
Right.
And then finally, if you can use what you've learned with the theory, and you this isn't doesn't come easy, you have to practice to do the reframing step that I described in the book, you can then maybe get somebody to agree with you.
Okay. So you're asking, you're listening, you're agreeing, and then you're reframing.
That's right.
Okay. I do think that sometimes what you said is exactly right. We focus on the things that we disagree on most quickly. And my analogy for this is when you go through a fast food drive-through and you make your order and you order it and you ask for them, you ask for your burger with no pickles. Well, when it comes and it has pickles on it, now, you're not appreciating the bun, you're not appreciating the beet, the cheese, that all of it. It's you're focused on that one thing. Maybe you don't like them, whatever it is, and you've got to deal with them, but that tendency to focus on areas of disagreement. As you've said, that's got to be something that you practice and practice fighting against. And it's got to be a complete mind shift to look for what are the areas that we can agree on? How can I find commonality in this?
Yeah, I use an Aesop fable to describe what happens when you do this, and it goes like this: The sun and the wind decided to have a contest to see which one was more powerful, and the way they were going to decide is who could take off the traveler's cloak first. So the wind goes first and blows as hard as it could, and of course, what does the traveler do but hold on really tightly to their cloak? And that's what happens when we argue and disagree with people, is they just hold on to what they're doing. And I have to say, the psychology research says that this is exactly what happens with our attitudes. It's not just my opinion. This is actually research. Like violent protests are the most likely to get people to disagree with what's going on, even if they agreed with the issue beforehand. If you're violent about it, you're going to get people to disagree with you.
Okay.
So back to the Aesop fable. The sun goes next and comes out and warms up the earth, and the traveler basks in the sun, and of course they take off their cloak and they sit on
Right.
it. And of course, which one was the most powerful? Obviously the sun was, because they got the person to relax.
Right.
That's what we're doing when we listen, when we ask questions, when we listen to people, and when we agree. We're getting people to relax and not fight with us.
Yeah, and here's kind of what I'm hearing you say, and that is, this is more about relationships than it is about winning arguments, and it's more about building something between two people than it is, creating a mutual understanding. I think is what you're talking about, rather than just being the one to be right. Because listen, there are people, and I think we all have this experience where when you get into an argument, people will say the most irrational and ridiculous things in order to try and win an argument and to defend their point. And you've lost the relationship building part of it. It's not about the people anymore. It's about the topic that you're talking about. Does that make sense?
Exactly. And that's why I called my newsletter Mending Fractured Relationships, because it's my belief that in order to heal this country, we've got to mend these relationships one at a time. Because the only way we're going to influence other people is if we can be in a relationship with them. Otherwise, they're going to ignore us.
Yeah, and it just the art of civil discourse, and because listen, there are elements that we disagree on. Okay, there are things that we look at differently, but at the end of the day, we are one country, we are one people, we are one nation, and we are. And I mean, you take that and it's smaller. We're a family, right? We're relatives. And
Absolutely.
in that, there's got to be some value to what we have as people in the relationship that we have. Yeah, that's awesome. It is beautiful.
Yeah. And we need to learn from each other because when we shut off the other side and we call them the enemy, we never learn anything. We never go forward. And if there's something we want to do, something we want to accomplish in this country, we need to learn from the other because you know what? They have a good point, at least some of the time. There's something there to agree with. Like for instance, you know, to say to my aunt, I love this country. Now it's something I never would have thought of until I saw this theory. But you know, I think the last few years has really increased my appreciation for the benefits of living in this country. And you know, I wouldn't have had that if it hadn't happened.
Sure. Well, okay. So the premise of the show is learning from smart people, right? And one of the things is that having people that do things differently than I do, I can learn from them because they've got an understanding of something. They've got a value system that's different than mine based on kind of what you're talking about. And so I can learn from everyone, even people who look at things differently than I do. It's going to open my understanding. It's going to. And I may find out that there are things that I have not considered, or there are ways of looking at it that I didn't have the awareness of. And I go ahead. I've got another question to follow up though after this.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, we all need to le learn and grow as people. And if we shut off a whole group of people, we never really hear what's underneath it and what's going on because the way they said, we don't like the way they said it, or we don't really understand what's going on. And if we can just relax and listen, we can learn.
Yeah, I guess one of the things that I think about is kind of a lack of self-awareness in that we don't realize we get so caught up either in emotions or in thoughts or whatever it is that we don't realize. So, not to overly beat up your example, but your situation, it's only in hindsight that you realize the end result of what you've done, and kind of that you missed out on 18 months of Ann Dot's life because of this experience. And you have that self-awareness now, but in the moment, you didn't have that self-awareness. Can you
Right.
just speak to that for a minute?
Absolutely. What I've discovered as I've been working on this for a few years now is that the more thinking I do about it, the more practicing I do, then I'm prepared for when it happens. I hadn't done the work ahead of time, so I reacted in the moment. See, you need to prepare for such encounters. And we now know that they're happening all the time. So the time to prepare is now. And you need to be in a good space mentally, physically, and emotionally, and spiritually. If that's your jam, you need to pray and meditate, eat nutritious food. You know, don't let yourself get run down and get into a situation like that because you're going to react.
Okay.
But you need to also prepare by doing the homework, by trying to understand the other person, where they might be coming from, and practicing. Because, you know, I've had encounters recently with my neighbors who were conservative, and even though I wasn't consciously trying to do this, it came out of my mouth. Something relatively good came out of my mouth. And one time it didn't. So I followed up and I said, you know, I meant to ask you more questions.
Sure.
And so I, you know, I didn't let it pass. I went back to the situation. I said, I meant to ask you questions. Why do you like blank?
Right. Yeah. And in that way, I think a very good way to wrap this all up is to say that it is very rare that a single conversation can destroy an entire relationship. That you're talking about mending fractured relationships, that even when you have something that has been split due to possibly even just a single conversation, that there's room for that to be fixed. There's room for that to be repaired.
Yes, I believe so. You know, not if it's totally irrevocable. I have one example that I wrote in my newsletter, you know, where people have been disowned or, you know, excommunicated from a church or something. And then you can't. Okay. And you probably have to do self-care and take care of yourself in that situation.
Right.
But as long as you've got a little bit of an opening and you start in with asking questions, and the questions can vary. And that's what I talk about in my newsletter, is in different situations, different questions. Again, that's preparation you need to do. And, you know, as long as you start with an opening and show that you're open to thinking about what they're saying and not just get into an argument, you can start to mend this relationship.
Got it. Excellent. Karen Tibbles, thank you so much for sharing. And this has been a lot to think about. If people are trying to find you on the web, like, what's your website? Where can they find you easiest?
Okay. The best website for this work is persuadedon'tpreach.com with no apostrophe.
Okay.
And in there, you'll find a list of resources. And among the resources are a link to my website, Mending Fractured Relationships, which I'm updating once a week.
Fantastic. I will include that link, and I'll put in some other of your social media links and stuff. They'll go down in the show notes and people can catch you there. Wonderful. It's time for three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
All right. A genie gives you three wishes. What are they?
To see my son, to travel.
Okay.
And to give speeches to people in real life and not just on the internet.
It makes a lot of sense. Can you tell me what is something that is on your bucket list?
I want to go to China.
You know, in this day and age, that is one of the more surprising answers that I've heard, just due to the fact that right now, China is kind of like, it feels like it's being portrayed. And this is where the virus came from. This is, and you're like, hey, I want to go. Any particular reason that you're thinking China?
It's been on my list for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
What, I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff in China. You know, the Great Wall of China, one of the only man-made things that can be seen from space, which is pretty neat. Hey.
Yeah, my son and his fiance went to the Great Wall last year, well, 2 years ago, before the pandemic, and I'm jealous.
Hey, you know what? It's your bucket list. It's not mine. So have fun with that. Last thing, do you have a guilty go-to kind of like guilty pleasure midnight snack?
Chocolate peanut butter ice cream.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that. Thank you very much, Karen. You are indeed a person. You are indeed smart, and you have shared a lot. I appreciate you being on today. I hope that folks take advantage of what you're talking about. I really hope that our country comes to a place where we can not just talk to each other, but that we can respect each other, that we're willing to understand that everybody's got different perspectives. Everybody, and as you said, that there's something underneath, that it's about the values that we have, and we can appreciate others' values, and we can listen to other people to hear where they're coming from, not just to refute what they're saying. So thank you for being here. To all my listeners, I appreciate you being with us today. I would encourage you again to subscribe to the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification button so that you can find out whenever any new episodes come out. And I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.